Ladies and gentlemen, let's give him a big round of applause, Senator Rand Paul.
I think that's the closest I ever got to being a basketball player. Since playing on the B team in seventh grade. But it is great to be here. When Jason was talking about the party and becoming so Republican in Christian County, I was thinking back when I first ran, I went to my in-law, you got to start with somebody. I said, well, will you support me? And they said, sure, of course, you're our son-in-law. And I said, well, you know, it's in a Republican primary, you got to be a Republican. They said, well, you know, when we got to Logan County, they told us it was not worthwhile being in a Republican primary because there was no primary. And I said, well, you have to switch. And I said, besides, I hear you guys talk all the time. It's like, when's the last time you voted for a Democrat for president? So this is 2010, they said Kennedy. And I said, well, it's been a while. It's about time that you change. The party, I think, left Kennedy a long time ago. As I travel around the country and around Kentucky, people come up to me and they say, how are you and the president getting along these days? So I thought I'd start there because it seems to be we never agree. Actually, we agree on many things. It just happens that what's in the media are the things that we disagree on. I've known him for over a decade. I met him in 2013. Like every other person in the United States, I was asking him for money, and he'll tell you, yeah, they all want my money. They're always after my money. But mine was for a good cause. I was doing a mission trip to Guatemala at the time to do cataract surgery there with the University of Utah. And so we asked him for a donation, and he did. He gave a donation there. I went a couple years later to Haiti, and he also gave us a donation there. So I've known him for a long time. We played golf dozens of times. So there are many things that I like Donald Trump. Last time I played golf, I really said this, not to suck up to him, because he knows I don't suck up to him. But I told him I still think he's the best president we've had in my lifetime. That includes Reagan. Why? He's been for some things that even Reagan kind of fell back on. Reagan ran on, we're going to get rid of the Department of Education. We're going to do it at the state and local level, like it's supposed to be. It's been in every Republican platform for 20, 30, 40 years now, but Reagan actually didn't do much about doing that. The first person to actually do that has actually been Donald Trump. Now, we haven't gotten rid of it because it probably requires legislation, and we got some weak-kneed Republicans and a whole lot of Democrats that want to keep education in Washington. But I think it's been a good thing that he's tried, and he has given the directive, and they've tried to make the Department of Education smaller in Washington and bring it back home. The Doge movement. I was a big fan of the Doge movement. I know Elon Musk personally. Went to Austin a couple weeks ago and was on the Joe Rogan show, and then spent about 3 hours with Elon Musk talking about Doge, talking about what we could do to try to continue the movement to get rid of waste and fraud in our government. So there are many things I like. Bobby Kennedy. I'm personal friends with Bobby Kennedy, the MAHA movement. As a physician, I may not agree with everything he prescribes, but I think you should have the freedom to make your choice. I mean, I believe in the right to choose what kind of medicines you use, what kind of vaccines you decide to take, and really getting enough information about this should be completely your decision. So a lot of things that I do work together with him on. On the first two impeachments, arguably, I was the most prominent, loudest, and most poignant of the defenders on the second impeachment. I introduced a resolution saying that you can't impeach somebody who's not president, which seems pretty simple, but they were impeaching a non-president. I can't impeach any of you. If you're in public office, you could be impeached. But if you are not in office, you cannot be impeached. Impeachment's how you remove someone from office. And it used to be for some malfeasance, but most of the stuff against Trump was for political differences. So I fought it. I put forward a resolution that said it's unconstitutional to remove a president who's no longer the president, and I got 44 votes. And you say, well, you didn't win. That happens to me on occasion. I didn't win, but by showing that there were 44 votes, I showed that there weren't 60 votes for the impeachment. And that was the very first vote. Why was that important? Because there were several Republicans who eventually did go over and vote for impeachment. But many of them had voted initially for that it was unconstitutional. It was a little harder for them to drift towards impeachment. So we got that on the record early on, and I think in many ways that did save them from that impeachment. We don't always agree. We had a big debate over the big, beautiful bill, and how could someone be against a beautiful bill? I mean, really, how could you be against that? A big part of the bill was reaffirming the tax cuts from 2017. I think the tax cuts were the best thing he did, frankly. The tax cuts I voted for in 2017, one of the big things was immediate expensing. I talked to a couple people here that are in building and construction. If you buy a bulldozer and it costs you $150,000, if you immediately can expense it, a year or two later you can buy another one. If it takes you 5 years to expense it, you're not buying another bulldozer for 5 years. These were good things. I wholeheartedly supported them in 2017 and did again until somebody, and I won't mention any names, but Lindsey Graham, decided that it wouldn't be just the tax cuts, that we would add spending proposals to it. So they added $400 billion in new spending to the big, beautiful bill. But then, for me, the deal killer was they added $5 trillion increase in the debt ceiling. Well, conservatives have always been against raising the debt ceiling, as historically where the conservatives would make their mark. We didn't always win, but we would have a big debate over it. We had never, ever raised the debt ceiling $5 trillion in one setting. And so we negotiated to the end, and I told him, I will vote for it if you make that a separate vote, or if we reduce it to an amount that we'll have to discuss it again in a few months. I wasn't successful in that, and some people grew angry. There might even be a person here who doesn't like that. I don't support the president enough. But here's the point. I ran on being a conservative. I ran on balancing the budget. I ran on less spending, smaller government, the Constitution. And people can choose otherwise if they don't like that. But I think it'd be a mistake just to have a rubber stamp. You know, we have elections going on now where people say, I will do what he tells me all the time, every time. Look, Donald Trump, I still think is the best president of my lifetime. But he isn't always right. He needs some pushback. He needs some people saying things. So he called me the other day, and we were talking about the spending bills. And we were talking about some of the fraud that was going on in Minnesota. The Somali population largely, but a bunch of people have been ripping off the system to the tune of about $9 billion. Well, we had a spending bill before us, and I said, well, you know, maybe we shouldn't put more money into refugee welfare. Maybe we ought to say you have to have a sponsor, you have to work, like every other immigrant that comes to our country. And he agreed with me. So, because I am not a shrinking violet, I put forward an amendment. I also told them they would have to work over the weekend unless they took my amendment and had a vote on it. So I got a vote. In fact, I've had more votes, and this is one reason you see sometimes what I'm for or against it, I've had more votes on my amendments than anybody else in the Senate for the last 5 years. Because I say, well, if you want to go home, you got to vote on my amendment. So we had a vote. And I think it's good. You know, we talk about primaries dividing us, then we have to come together. That is true. But we have to know what people stand for, because they tell us one thing and then they do another. So I voted to remove the refugee welfare program and simply say you have to have a sponsor. And look, I'm not against refugees. I think some of the best Americans just got here. We have many immigrants in Bowling Green. I'm not against immigrants. You should come like every other immigrant. Legal immigrants come, you have a sponsor, you work. And if you don't, you should go back home. Go back where you've been. So I put forward the amendment. We had the vote. And amongst our caucus, I actually won. 30 Republicans voted with me, and 22 voted no. The ones who voted no were typically part of the spending committees. And they said, well, we already made a deal with the Democrats. We can't go back on the deal. And I said, well, what's the deal? No amendments. So that we're just going to vote against amendments. We like your amendment. We're really for it, but it's too late to do it now. Now, son, is not the time to be doing this. It's like, when is the time? When is the time we're going to talk about this? We just heard about all this fraud. And I had just spoken with the president on the phone about it. He said he was supportive. And so that created a lot of friction, including some of the friction with the recent nominee who came before us, who had decided that he was so unhappy about voting against my amendment that he decided he'd spout off to the Oklahoma press by saying, yeah, Rand Paul deserved what he got when that guy attacked him from behind. He's, you know, he said, oh, you just, we'll let that go by side. I said, well, I had 6 broken ribs. 3 of them snapped in half that rubbed upon each other for 3 months. I had part of my lung removed. I'm not really willing to be good friends with you if you think that's funny or if you think you're supportive of that. We have a political difference. We can settle political differences. But we really don't need people in office who think violence is either funny, fun, or to be encouraged. There are people who get the next step from assault is being shot. And there have been people shot. I was friends with Charlie Kirk, and what a sad day that was for all of us. And so we do need to think about what we say and how we say it. So when I was talking to the president about the refugee money, I also brought up, I said this morning, the ambassador from Colombia called me, and he said that he's worried the United States is going to attack him after Venezuela. And I said, I don't want another war. I'll do my small part here. I called the president, sent him a text, and I said, will you talk? The president of Colombia would like to speak with you. So I got on the phone. He says, call me back. The president speaks in all caps. He texts in all caps. He texts me back, ASAP, 4! Call me now, 5! Everything's in caps. So I called him. But this is one of the things I like about him. He's direct and to the point. And I didn't have to go through 5 layers of people. I told him about the president wanting to speak with him. He says, yes, if he'll call me, I'll speak with him. They spoke later that afternoon. They met 2 weeks later. And there was some desire within the administration to bomb Colombia next. We don't need another war. And Colombia's actually been our friend for 30-some-odd years. Do they have a drug problem? Yes. But they've actually cooperated with us for 30 years. Is it perfect? No, but I'd rather increase the cooperation rather than start bombing Colombia and hope for the best, you know, to come out of there. But there are still things like that that I can talk to him about, despite our differences. Another one is something called association health plans. The biggest problem or expense for people who work by themselves or in a small business, lawn business, accountant, doctor, whatever, somebody has 2 or 3 employees, you have no leverage to get good insurance or to get a good price for your insurance. So what I've advocated is this. You should be able to join a collective, collectively bargain. You should be able to join like Amazon, and some guy or some woman from Amazon says, we have 10 million people want insurance, you gotta talk to me. So if it were Blue Cross or Blue Shield or United or one of these big companies, instead of you, the individual owner, talking to them, where they laugh at you and say, take it or leave it, they would talk to a representative of the group you've joined that would be enormous. It would be bigger than any corporation. So if you work for Toyota over in Georgetown, Kentucky, you get pretty good insurance, a decent price, but they have the leverage of their entire corporation to negotiate for you. If you're an individual with a small business, you don't. But if we legalize this, people could buy it through Amazon, they could buy it through Costco, Sam's Club, Walmart. There would be this enormous number of people that would have one person negotiating for them. When I told the president the idea, he immediately got it and wanted to do it. So there are things that I think when the ideas are brought to him, he's very open-minded and will do. On some of the questions, I still continue to be the same voice you've heard for a while. Debt's wrong, and I think the debt's the biggest threat to our country right now. Right. Bigger threat than anybody invading, frankly, is the debt. We have to do something about it. So every year I introduce what's called the Penny Plan. When I first introduced it, it was, all we had to do was keep spending flat for 5 years, no increase, no cuts, no increase, and the budget would balance in 5 years. That was good until a year or two later when spending kept going up, and then we called it the Penny Plan. All you had to do, if they would have listened to me, was got one penny across the board for 5 years, it would balance. It got worse, then it became the 2-penny plan, then it was the nickel plan, then COVID hit, and they instituted all this spending, but it just never goes away. So the baseline was going up like this in spending, then it shot up like this in the pandemic, and now it's going up like this again. So we're trillions of dollars beyond what we used to spend. So now it's a 6-penny plan. But I think it's still a good concept, because I have people come all the time. There are things that people want from government, and many of them are things that you're sympathetic to. So for example, one group, and I have family members with Alzheimer's, they come, they have their purple ribbons, and they tell me how they want government to spend some money on research for Alzheimer's. And I said, look, we're a rich country, we ought to be able to do that. But I said, we brought in $5 trillion last year and we spent $7 trillion. We're $2 trillion short. If we cut 6 cents on every dollar, we could balance. Alzheimer's research got $100 million last year. What if we could only give you $94 million this year? And this is tough because it's an emotional issue. Everyone around the table who has a family member with Alzheimer's nods their heads and says, well, gosh, if it's for the good of the country, we'll take a little bit less if everybody else does too. But if you tell that to a politician or you're running for office, people say, he hates old people, he doesn't like people with Alzheimer's, and he's against them. And it's like, well, no, I'm for all of us. Even if you want the research for Alzheimer's, you've got to balance your budget so the country is strong enough to have that. The same with the military. You've got to have a strong military, you got to have a strong economy, we got to balance our budget. We're spending $1 trillion in interest every year and getting bigger. So something's got to happen. I think the one thing that fundamentally we have to desire, and this is something you will figure out, you'll figure out some in this election, do you want a rubber stamp? Do you want somebody as your other senator who only do what the president tells them every time he tells them and not stand up and be for what we think is best, to be for a conservative vision for our country, to be for a republic, to believe that our rights come from our creator, and that's what we're defending. You can like the president, but it doesn't mean that that's what we're here for. We don't take an oath to the president. We take an oath to the Constitution. And I think if we realize that, it doesn't mean that we're enemies of the president. It means that what we are doing is standing up for where our liberty came from. Our liberty comes from our creator. The purpose of government isn't to pass laws. People keep saying, well, we just want more laws. And if you pass 100 laws, we'd like you better. It's like, that's not the job. The job is to defend your liberty. Most laws are taking away your liberty. And we already have thousands and thousands of laws. It isn't like we're starting next year with no laws. You already have all these laws. You have all these. We have 60,000 pages of regulations added every year. I could go for a year where we didn't add any. That wouldn't be no regulations. That would just be no new regulations, for goodness sakes. But I think the country is worth defending. I think there's no place better on earth that I'd rather be. I raised my family here in Kentucky. I'm a proud grandpa. I got a new grandson now. And I'm excited to do what I can to defend our God-given liberty, and I will continue in that fight as long as you'll have me. Thank you very much.